We're discussing chiropractic care in the pandemic on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to figures from the American Chiropractic Association, roughly 70,000 chiropractors nationwide treat more than 35 million Americans each year. And the profession, it has come under scrutiny in the pandemic for contributing to misinformation about the COVID vaccine. And we want to talk about that. Do you see a chiropractor? How often do you go? Do you get adjustments for a stiff neck or back pain or some other type of ailment? It's 800-642-1234. Chiropractor Chris Resch has a clinic in Neenah. He's president of the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association. Chris, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, Kate. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm looking forward to our conversation this morning.
Yes, thank you. You know, there has been this mounting concern that chiropractors are continuing to promote and spread misinformation about the pandemic, especially on social media. And this came to a head recently at a conference in the Dells. What is your reaction to what's going on in your profession?
Well, it is a hot topic, no doubt about that. It's on the minds of every American that is walking throughout business and companies and raising families. And yes, as you mentioned in the opening, I am the president of Wisconsin Chiropractic Association, and there's approximately 2,500 chiropractors in the state of Wisconsin. Not all of those chiropractors are members of the WCA, but what we like to say at the WCA is we do still represent all chiropractors in the state regarding information, education, and helping chiropractors thrive and then carrying on that to their patients and patient care. And yes, there was an AP article about another organization that sponsored a conference about the vaccination and about COVID. And it was promoted as to be very balanced information, bringing speakers in that were going to talk about the benefits of vaccinations and also other speakers that are nationally known that are very much anti-vax. I did not attend the program. And again, it was not a program that was sponsored by the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association. It was a program sponsored by another organization. And it was from what I hear, it was a little bit more it wasn't truly balanced information. It was probably more anti-vax information than anything. And then of course, when it's being reported upon, the AP article talked a lot about the anti-vax nature of the content, and then even more extreme things that were not said at that conference that really get people's attention. And so I think the reporting was a little bit unbalanced as well. The AP article did interview our executive director, John Murray, who I think did a very nice job explaining the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association viewpoint on vaccinations, in which I want to make it very clear with you, Kate, that the WCA is very much vax neutral. We're not out there to tell people don't get the vaccination, and we're equally not telling people that you need to get the vaccination. We're very much vax neutral.
Should chiropractors be talking about it at all then? Should chiropractors be talking about the vaccine?
That's a great question. As you know, chiropractors are more naturopathic. We really promote health, wellness, fitness through nutrition, through movement, through exercise. Prescribing medication is not in our scope of practice in the state of Wisconsin. So we're not educated at the college level or even at the continuing education level of prescribing or allowed to prescribe any type of medication. So therefore, is the chiropractor the person to be talking about the most appropriate healthcare provider to talk about vaccinations and medications? My opinion is no. I think that is more in the realm of the allopathic profession with your medical doctor.
We're talking with Chris Resch, who is a chiropractor, president of the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association. His practice is in Neenah. You can join in. How often do you go to a chiropractor? And has that changed in the pandemic? Should chiropractors be subject to vaccine mandates? 800-642-1234 to join in. Chris, I came across this journal article that was published last year in Chiropractic and Manual Therapies, the journal, and it concluded that COVID must be a wake-up call for chiropractors, quote, a call to action to eliminate the unethical and potentially dangerous claims made by chiropractors who practice outside the boundaries of scientific evidence. How do you feel about that statement?
So I'm not familiar with that article. So the article was basically stating that we need to stay in our lane. Is that pretty much what it's saying?
And in terms of the misinformation that was surfacing on social media about chiropractic, making claims that, like, you know, you can get an adjustment and boost your immunity, and you can get an adjustment and become less susceptible to getting COVID or spreading it.
Sure. Yeah. That also is a very hot topic. And so there is no magic adjustment to eliminate the flu or to make the flu go away faster. There's nothing that the World Federation on Chiropractic or the ACA has ever published stating that this is, you know, the magic, you know, chiropractic treatment to protect yourself from COVID. If you go to a chiropractor and the chiropractor helps you with back pain, neck pain, other joint pain that allows you to participate in healthier activities, like, you know, exercise, your job, and then you incorporate all the other things that I mentioned with nutrition, hydration, you know, all of those healthy things that we all like to do and try to do better. I do see a link to your immunity that way, and also with natural supplementation. But yes, the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association, and I would be very much willing to bet a high majority of chiropractors would agree with that statement.
How is chiropractic care being affected by the pandemic?
Well, it was highly affected, along with everyone else, back in March of 2020. I remember my wife and I taking our daughter down to Chicago to look for an apartment when she was going into grad school. And it was Friday, March 13th, and the buzz was really picking up about the pandemic. By the time we got home on Sunday, everyone was canceling vacations and masks were coming on and the NCAA tournament was being canceled. So like everyone else, chiropractic was very affected. And you have to keep in mind that probably 90% or even, you know, probably closer to 95% of chiropractors in the state of Wisconsin are also small business owners, or they work for a small business. We do have chiropractors that work for big box medical organizations. You know, Aurora applies employs over 100 chiropractors in the state of Wisconsin. But for most of us, we as small business owners, we had to roll up our sleeves and we have to be our own HR person, our own environmental health and safety manager for our practices. We have to look out for our employees. So we really leaned on the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association for education on how to respond and what are the CDC guidelines. So we had to anticipate the downturn in business because fewer people were coming in the doors. We had to make sure that we abided by all the state mandates as far as mask wearing and, you know, making sure that we're doing all the appropriate safety measures with cleaning and that type of thing. And optics matter, too. Patients are watching how you're responding to this. So are you following those state mandates? Are you doing the proper cleaning? Do you have the plexiglass up and all of those things? So we had to function that not only in how we take care of our patients, but also all of the small business items that go along with that. And then, you know, keep in mind that, you know, in chiropractic, we're a hands-on profession. So maintaining social distancing of 6 feet is not necessarily going to happen.
Not possible.
But we did do other measures, you know, like in our waiting room, we spread the chairs out more. A lot of us chose to keep the doors open for airflow, even while we're in our treatment rooms with our patients, during the non-confidentiality portions. And then we had to anticipate the possibility of a statewide shutdown with the stay-at-home order. And we were very thankful that Governor Evers respected our profession, realizing that chiropractors really help people in the workforce with the supply chain to keep our doors open, to allow patients to continue to see us throughout the shutdown. So again, very thankful for that.
How has the association followed CDC guidelines and applied those guidelines? Has it been clear along the way? What is your take on that?
Yeah, we constantly update our website on all of the latest and greatest information out there on CDC guidelines. Throughout the early time in the pandemic and then through the shutdown, we had several webinars on what we can do in chiropractic from a patient care standpoint and also from a business standpoint. So educating our members through our website and through seminars, webinars, that type of thing was very important at that time.
Wisconsin chiropractor Chris Resch with us on his industry, what he tells patients in the pandemic. Do you consult with your chiropractor about healthcare decisions? Have you opted to go to a chiropractor instead of a general practitioner in these times? What went into that decision? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Chris Resch here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing chiropractic care and the state of the industry on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The chiropractic profession focuses on the spine and other joints of the body and their connection to the nervous system. And this idea that when our body is in proper alignment, it has a better chance of healing. The journal Chiropractic and Manual Therapies, as I mentioned earlier, published a paper last year urging the profession to act in the best interests of patients and public health, viewing the pandemic as a, quote, call to action. What has your chiropractor told you about COVID? Did they urge you to get vaccinated or not? Join in 800-642-1234. Chris Resch leads the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association and is with us for about 9 more minutes. Chris, President Biden is requiring COVID vaccinations for about 17 million healthcare workers. In what situations might that include chiropractors?
Well, chiropractors that work in the big box medical establishments are strongly being encouraged, if they want to maintain their employment, to have the vaccination. So in those situations, it could be a financial decision to get the vaccination or not, regardless of their viewpoint of if they're pro-vax or anti-vax or somewhere in the middle, which a lot of healthcare providers are. At the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association, as I mentioned in the first segment, you know, we're vax neutral. So it's the opinion is you do you, me do me. Keeping in mind that a lot of chiropractors are vaccinated. And the state of Wisconsin has a reasonable exemption for vaccination decisions based on personal reasons, obviously medical reasons and religious reasons. And I would like to see that stay in play. So it's taken seriously. So if people really do have that reasonable exemption viewpoint, that viewpoint is honored.
I want to ask you about something in the practice. It's the use of static surface electromyography, that device that's used to measure electrical activity. And then you get this colorful readout with bars of your neck or your back or whatever. And some chiropractors use these machines a lot. Others don't trust them because they say you can't reproduce the results. How do you see these devices?
It's a tool that I did experiment with, and personally, I found it to be inconsistent, so I discontinued using it myself. So there's different philosophies in chiropractic. Some philosophies are based on spinal alignment. Some philosophies are a little bit more based on mobility and muscle balance and joint motion. And my practice of chiropractic is more based on the alignment, the mobility and the muscular balance and the joint motion. So I don't find that tool to be very useful.
What technology has changed in chiropractic care?
Well, when I started practicing 30 years ago, we pretty much utilized the chiropractic adjustment, or some people may call it the manipulation, as the sole source of what we do. And what's happened in the last 30 years is chiropractors have integrated several other tools, different modalities, and some of those would be like an electrical stimulation, physical ultrasound, And what I've really, really, really enjoyed seeing in the evolution of chiropractic in the last 30 years is incorporating so much more of an exercise base into what we do, because I'm a strong believer, and several chiropractors are in my camp, that if we can, enhance our healing, not only with the adjustment, but with the proper exercise techniques, encouraging our patients to be more active. Obviously, that's just going to help their lifestyle and improve our outcomes, and also help prevent relapse.
It feels so, like there's a lot of blend and crossover with physical therapy. Have you seen that?
Oh, yes, 100%. I've had the pleasure of working with my wife, Carrie, for the last 30 years. She's a physical therapist, and in our practice, we employ 4 chiropractors, 5 physical therapists, and 2 physical therapy assistants. So yeah, incorporating physical therapy techniques into chiropractic has been great for our profession.
We're talking with Chris Resch, who's a chiropractor, president of the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association, and you can join in. Have you opted to go to a chiropractor recently? What was it for? And what has your experience been with chiropractic care? Join in at 800-642-1234. Chris, I want to talk with you about insurance coverage, and some insurance plans say you have to have an active treatment plan for coverage of that visit or multiple visits. How do you see health insurance plans treating chiropractic care?
I think for the most part, very well. And we're very fortunate in the state of Wisconsin that chiropractic care is covered by third-party insurance plans, Medicare, Medicaid, and then like you mentioned, a lot of the larger insurance companies are very prominent here. And if we stay in bounds and abide by the guidelines that are set out with, like you mentioned, active treatment plans, and supply the patient with the care that they deserve, no more, no less, we're treated very well.
How often do you see patients able to use insurance versus paying full out of pocket?
If they have a diagnosis that is substantiated by a history and an examination, then it's most likely covered. I would say, I don't say all the time, but there are times we do get some denials in coverage, but that's usually cleaned up with proper documentation and communication. So high majority of the time would be my answer.
I want to look at the patient consumer side of this. How would you suggest someone searches for a chiropractor? How do you make sure a chiropractor is licensed? And how can someone be their best advocate, make sure they're not, falling for a far-fetched claim?
Well, I'm a big fan of word of mouth, to be honest with you, Kate. If you have someone that you trust, and they see a chiropractor and you trust their judgment, that's always a great place to start. Consulting with your medical doctor is also an excellent resource. 30 years ago, I didn't have a whole lot of referrals from medical doctors. Oftentimes, a medical doctor would tell my patients or a chiropractic patient, oh, we don't recommend chiropractic. And then it started evolving to then, well, if you're going to see a chiropractor, why don't you see this chiropractor or that chiropractor? Because I know their practice style and I trust them. To now, we receive medical referrals, if not daily, definitely weekly. So it's really come a long way. And to see if a chiropractor is licensed, you can look that up at the state level online. You can see if they've got any offenses against them. And like I said, back to the word of mouth. I'm not a big fan of seeing who has the fanciest website. That's not really a great way to research the chiropractor. It's always good to look at. And then, if you go to a chiropractor, does the recommendations make sense? All right. So if you have an exam and the chiropractor recommends 5 or 6 treatments, and then we're going to reassess the situation, measure your progress. And if you're getting better, it might take a few more treatments. If you're all better, then we'll discontinue care. And if you're not better at all, we'll incorporate some other practice, possibly working with your primary care doctor or a specialist. or order more diagnostic tests that are outside of our office.
So what what I hear you saying is always look for that forward progress. What is that next step we're trying to get to here?
No doubt. If you go to a chiropractor 5 or 6 times, you should be seeing some progress. It's not going to take us 25 visits to figure out that we can or cannot help you.
Yeah. Chris, very quickly here, because we're almost out of time, what are some of the things that are popping up in the pandemic that people come in to address? Because so much work from home now.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Early on in the pandemic, during the stay-at-home order, we had so many patients coming in because they're working at home. They've got their laptop at the kitchen table. So the height of the computer isn't proper. The chair isn't the best. Or maybe they're working on their laptop from the couch or still in bed. So posture and working were definitely a factor that still goes on today because plenty of folks are still working from home. And what we found when the stay-at-home order ended, our practice just exploded. In August of 2020, that was the busiest month we ever had in patient volume. So I think patients were going to facilities for their musculoskeletal care where they knew there weren't going to be other infected people. So they weren't necessarily going to the hospital. They were going to private practice.
Chris, thank you for joining us. Chris Resch, chiropractor in Neenah, president of the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association. News update is next on the Ideas Network. We're discussing falling K-12 enrollment in Wisconsin and what that means for one school district, Beloit. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Overall, public school enrollment dipped by about 4,000 students this fall compared to last. The State Department of Public Instruction says it'll have a more nuanced headcount in January. But public school enrollment has not rebounded from last year's 3% drop. Does your child go to public school? Have you seen an enrollment decline in your district? What is your student's class size now? 800-642-1234. Dan Kieser is superintendent of the school district of Beloit. He was named to the position earlier this year after serving as interim and previously directed secondary teaching and learning for the Waukesha School District. Dan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Good morning. So the school district of Beloit saw a 13% decrease in enrollment from 2019 to 2021. Can you put that into context for us?
Yeah, so putting that into context, that is a dip of about, 400 or 500 students. So you're talking about almost a school. That gives a context. We are a school district of 12 schools, and 12 schools and programs, 13 different entities, because we also partner with Head Start, Early Head Start, and we also have an Even Start and a Fresh Start programs in conjunction with the Blackhawk Technical College and Community Action.
So what's going on there? What factors are contributing to that 400 to 500 student loss?
So, much has been made about the pandemic and just a lot of anxiety with health and safety. But also, what can't be overlooked is we recently had a new independent public charter school open up in Beloit, very close to actually where I am at. And
that's the Lincoln Academy.
Correct. And they have 300, almost 400 students. And we learned this year from DPI that about 360 students that would have been Beloit resident school district students have moved there or are enrolled there. And that is a trend that is concerning, but yet it also is a trend that you see a lot around school districts that do have many charter schools.
Yeah, and so what, what are the decisions around going to a new charter school? What are your parents, considering?
Well, there's a lot to consider. Even though Beloit has this new charter school, we are a tightly packed community with surrounding school districts. We have seven school districts that are well within a driving radius of our school district. And we also are a very commuter type community. We have many families that live in Beloit and work in other communities. And we also have a lot of families that work in our communities and come to Beloit. And what we are seeing with our open enrollment ends is that some families are choosing to drive their students to Beloit, enroll their students here, and while they work, and then they pick up their children at the end of the school day, end of their work day, and head back home.
What about homeschooling? What have you seen there?
It's been interesting. Doing a little bit of investigating, just specifically with the charter school in mind, because they are funded differently than normal open enrollment protocols and practices. We have some students who were homeschooled. They did not attend any public school, and they ended up enrolling at the charter school. So there is a little bit of that, but mainly the large portion of it is open enrolling either to another public school or to a charter school.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dan Keyser, who is the school district of Beloit superintendent, as we discuss how his district is responding to various challenges, especially in enrollment brought on by the pandemic. You can join in. Is your child enrolled in a public school? Have you seen an enrollment dip? What has been done? What does that mean for classrooms, for teachers? Are you considering homeschooling your child? What goes into that decision? 800-642-1234. Dan, you know, about 80% of parents nationwide who move their kids out of their typical public school said they plan to return once things were safer. And that survey was conducted last fall in 2020. Do you find that sentiment is real in your district?
I would say for us, in specifically here in Beloit, we've been very fortunate. In fact, we've had some families tell us specifically that they've enrolled here in the school district of Beloit because of our mitigation factors. We announced at the end of last school year that we were going to implement all of the CDC and DHS mitigation protocols in every school that was not able to have access to the vaccine, meaning staff and students. It was in August that we chose to include our high schools including universal masking. And that was actually something that reassured a lot of families open enrolling to Beloit, because there were a lot of conversations in surrounding districts about whether they were going to or not going to do certain mitigation measures. We just made it universal at the end of last school year. I think that this is still, we all want to have our normal lives back. But we know that this pandemic is far from over. We are excited and encouraged that the CDC has opened up vaccination down to age 5. And we look forward to seeing more and more students getting vaccinated.
As you follow those CDC guidelines, you know, air exchange and ventilation systems, HVAC systems, has been a huge dollar upgrade, you know, that schools have to look at and are faced with. What are the implications there with updating ventilation?
That has been a concern, and in fact, we've been prioritizing the federal dollars that have been coming to school districts, specifically our school district. We've invested in updating all of our filtration in all of our schools to filter out the COVID virus, and as well as investing in our infrastructure. So last year we updated all of our devices. We were able to pay off our lease payments, and so we were able to take those off our books. We invested over $2 million in new curricular resources for elementary literacy so that we could better address that unfinished teaching and learning from last year. And we also invested in new science curricular resources, a lot more hands-on, a lot more engagement. And we look to partnering with our community or organizations in helping to meet the social emotional needs over and above what we're doing in our schools already.
So what I'm hearing from you is those federal dollars are getting to you, are getting to the school district of Beloit.
They are. With our demographics, we have about 72% students who qualify for free and reduced lunch. Those federal dollars, as they're listed, follow the Title I formula, and so those dollars are coming to us. Now we have what they call the ESSER I and ESSER II dollars. The state is finalizing its ESSER III application with the federal government, and so we look forward to having that come to the school district later this year.
So when you do look at falling enrollment, that also has an impact on your funding formula at the state level, regardless of the federal dollars coming in for pandemic relief. What are the financial implications there for your school district's budget in future years?
It has a huge impact on our budget. I'm already looking at the next biennium budget at the state level, and all the experts are saying this is a unique time where we can't even forecast at the state level what that will be. Most specifically for Beloit, it is attuned to a $3.5 million loss. And that is just the payment that is going to be transferred from our last state aid payment to the charter school. But in addition to that, the way the funding formula is situated, the students that are going to the charter school were counted in our overall membership, which reduced the overall decline enrollment exemption that school districts are afforded when they have declining enrollment, which was another $1.3 million hit to our overall budget. So it had a huge impact and has a long-lasting impact. So we have some important conversations with the board and the community as to what we want to prioritize moving forward.
What are the implications on staffing? Would you need to lay off teachers if you see these, student declines in the hundreds?
Well, we've been extremely fortunate that we've maintained our staffing levels. We've not had to lay off or furlough any staff, but we have just passed our budget for this year, and tonight in our board meeting, that is going to be the conversation. What are our priorities and how we're going to budget for the future? Once we lay out those priorities, we will build a budget that will meet those priorities moving forward. So staffing, programming, external partnerships, all of those things are going to be conversations that we have to engage in.
School District of Beloit Superintendent Dan Keyser with us, sharing his perspective on falling enrollment and what the implications are for his southernmost district in the state. What are your questions about how enrollment affects the funding your child's district receives? Is there a new charter school in your area? Did you switch to a charter or a private in the pandemic? What went into that decision? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing K-12 enrollment declines in the pandemic, what that means for one district in Rock County, the school district of Beloit. Enrollment in Wisconsin public schools has dropped by about 30,000 students since the fall of 2019. How are you feeling the effects in your district? Still time to talk about it. 800-642-1234. Superintendent Dan Kieser is with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Andrew in Palmyra with a perspective. Andrew, hi. What are you thinking? Oh, and Andrew is gone. I guess we don't have Andrew. How about Steve in Sun Prairie? Steve, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, I think when I talk to a lot of parents, they're very frustrated with the curriculum. And if they have an opportunity, if their kids are not ingrained into schools like mine are, which are older, they want to look for alternatives. You know, we look at Dane County. There's a group called the Dane County Equity Consortium. It's a consortium of Dane County schools. That's a political organization that pushes critical race theory into the school. Even Lodi is part of it, where coming off the pandemic where they had to cancel the second half of the year because of COVID, rather than having staff development around how to combat the inevitable learning loss, they decided to read a book, So You Want to Talk About Race, which is a political book. So parents are tired of it and are looking for alternatives. Hopefully, the superintendent can talk about what they can do specifically to get these parents to have trust in the schools again so they don't have to look for alternatives.
Steve, thank you. And, you know, we've seen the politics have ignited over masking, over when to hold in-person classes, over test scores, over how to be anti-racist. And we've seen, Dan, you know, school board meetings turning nasty and divisive. What is going on? What is your take on this?
There are a lot of issues that are intersecting with the schools, both in the community, from the state of conversations around politics, our health, just even local community issues. I feel strongly that public schools and public school districts exist because their community exists. I feel very strongly that there was a time and a place when every school district was a strong, thriving school district because they listened to their community and built their school district around the values within their community. And I think that we've lost that in our recent times with the age of technology. And don't get me wrong, I am a huge techno buff. I love technology. I love the fact that we can have our students travel across the globe and intersect and interact with people in other countries with hitting the enter key. However, I think that what we've lost in our age of technology is that simple conversation with our families down the street at the farmer's market. And I think during my tenure here in the School District of Beloit, I want us to get back to that heart that we belong because our community exists. And as long as we can start to re-engage in those conversations, I think school districts will find their way to that balance and make sure that we are meeting the needs of our community.
And, you know, on the front of your website, it says that your district stands against all forms of systemic and institutional racism. So show us how you are doing this. How do you put this declarative sentence into action?
In multiple ways. We have a longstanding group called the Equality Committee, which has been made up of both district staff, community members, and even parents and that have been our sounding board. We are a very diverse community. We are roughly about a third Black, a third Hispanic, Latino, Latinx, and a third white. We have a lot of opportunities for dialogue and discussion. And in part, why I applied to come to Beloit was because of the diversity. To me, diversity means opportunity. When you have all like-minded, like individuals in a room, you open up the opportunity to have blind spots. And the nice thing about having a diverse community is those blind spots get challenged each and every day with every conversation. I also want to say that our community partners, having the Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA, Community Action, Blackhawk Technical College, we are having conversations about how best to meet the needs of our students. And as long as our focus can be on students, we are going to be challenging those stereotypes, because we have students from all walks of life, all backgrounds, all identities, and we have to meet the needs of each and every one of them as they walk through the door each day.
But, you know, the achievement gap, the reality is the achievement gap between racial groups in Wisconsin is among the largest of any state. And there was one analysis by UW-Milwaukee said African-American and Latinx teachers are rare in Wisconsin. What are you actively doing to address the structural barriers for people of color to get hired, to become teachers, to become administrators like yourself?
That is a great question. And it starts with exactly where we were talking about how do we meet the needs of our diversity, equity, and inclusion. As a white middle-aged male, I have a huge blind spot. I don't know what it means to be female. I don't know what it means to be Black or Latinx. And so it is simply not enough anymore for schools and school districts to say, we can't find Black educators or Black administrators or Latinx teachers or administrators. What we need to do is we need to have more racialized conversations with people who look different than us and think differently than us, so that we can break through those blind spots and barriers and start. Specifically, what we've done here in Beloit is we've had to look outside ourselves. We've had to partner with organizations that specialize in working with populations of color, Black, Latinx. We are talking about going down to Beloit. At one point, used to go to historically Black college and universities, HBCUs, to do recruiting fairs. And we are looking back to going back to that practice so that we can encourage, recruit, and not only recruit, but retain our staff of color. Mm. If they feel like they're welcome, that they're seen, and that they can have a space in our community, they're going to stay. And that's our best recruiting tool.
You know, and many K-12 leaders and districts like yourselves have been working on equity action plans or deepening existing equity plans. Where is Beloit on this continuum? Where is Beloit at in this journey?
I think we've had in our history some great opportunities where we've made some headway, and we've lost that. I look forward to having conversations again with our community, keeping and re-engaging in practices that were meeting the needs of our community and our school district, but then also exploring new opportunities. And I think in part it is partnering with groups that will help us challenge our beliefs. The biggest thing about being in a community for a long time is that you know the community. Mm. The shortcomings about being in a community for a long time is you sometimes lose perspective of what's outside of your community. And so having diversity also means diversity of thought by bringing people from the outside to ask critical questions of what we are doing and why we're doing it, so that we can learn and grow.
Dan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the Wisconsin Public Radio and all of your listeners.
Dan Keyser, Superintendent of the School District of Beloit. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.